The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ava Lewis from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence and Ebony magazines. The first article that I will be covering today is from Lifestyle Foods from Essence. Miss Jackson, also called Chef Jackson, even as he was pulling in an salary as a day trader 9 years ago, Mr. Jackson knew life had more to offer. My mother looked at me one day and said, "You look miserable," recalls the Washington, D.C. native. She was right. After some soul searching, I found my love with food. He took jobs in hotels and restaurants, including cooking for Marcus Samuelson and Rocco Di Spirito, before launching his own catering company, which in turn has led to his post of mouth-watering bites on Instagram at Mr. Foodtastic. My flavor profile is definitely sweet and savory. I love that combination, says 41-year-old. Recipes are guidelines at best. It's up to you as a chef to make that dish your own. He did just that with the decadent buttermilk biscuits he offered a city urban space in Midtown Manhattan last fall, and with his signature dish, scallops and grits. Jasmine Stewart of Milton, Georgia. ChefJasmine.com. At just 12 years old, Jasmine Stewart won the hearts and taste buds of America when she competed on MasterChef Junior in 2017, battling in front of famously cantankerous host Gordon Ramsay, and being eliminated on the show didn't deter her. "My favorite memory was when I returned to the show to regain my apron," she recalls. "I ultimately achieved my goal. But there is no way to prepare to hear your name called as a next MasterChef Junior. I was happy and grateful because my challenger, Justice, had worked really hard as well." Stewart began her culinary journey by following her mom around the kitchen. "Once I was trying to crack eggs and I ended up spilling the entire bowl all over the counter and floor," she remembers. "My mom just said, 'Don't worry about it. We can start over.' And we did. I have really enjoyed cooking since. Now she cooks for her family and others in a style she describes as healthy Southern food with Caribbean flair, a nod to her Jamaican roots. Her signature dish is Caribbean spiced salmon. It's easy to make and so full of flavor," Stewart says. Dominique Tolbert. Last summer at the Essence staff retreat, everybody had one question. Who made the delicious food? Meet Chef Dominique Tolbert, who had started her own catering company the previous summer. "I've been cooking for as long as I can remember," Tolbert, 25, says. "My culinary blends West African, Caribbean, and Latin America cuisines. After studying tourism management at New York University, she, as a restaurant manager at MGM Grand in Las Vegas, but she longed to be in the kitchen herself and left that job to take a culinary position at the Four Seasons in Baltimore. While there, she continued her dream and stepped out to cater events at the helm of her own company. She also worked as a private chef and host pop-up food events, including Issa Crab Fest and the Sunday Dinner series. "I grew up eating Liberian food," Tolbert says. "That's where my family is from. That's what I know best." Her signature dish, yucca con mojo, is the reinvention of cassava with garlic sauce. "This was originally a Cuban dish that has African roots," she explains. "I put a Peruvian twist on it with lots of garlic and some spice. I love this dish because It introduces diners to something new and lets West Africans experience Kosovo in a different way. From Essence, Seeing the Spotlight. Ella May ruled in 2018 despite little controversies like a fake sex tape, singer Jacquees' unauthorized remix of her song Trip, and rumors that she had singer-songwriter Kalani have been together for 2 years and share an apartment. When we met at New York City's Dream Downtown Hotel last year, May is glowing. The night before, she had made her debut on Saturday Night Live, serving up 90s-like nostalgia with her R&B hits Boot Up and Trip. I've never done anything like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, May says of another big first. It's completely different for me, so I'm excited. With 2 Grammy nominations and a nearly sold-out worldwide tour through March, she might as well get used to the spotlight. With the release of her self-titled debut album last October and the success of Boot Up, a song produced by her mentor and big brother, DJ Mustard, May went viral. When we first recorded Boot Up, I loved the song, but none of us expected it to do what it has done, the singer admits. Boot Up eventually became the cuffing season anthem of 2018. But May has a different idea for 2019. I've been telling people this is the year to fall in love for real, she says. I'm trying to start a movement. From Essence, They Found the Fountain. On November 2018 issue, marked the return of our Ageless Beauties feature. We were all mesmerized by the youthful looks and attitudes of the ladies featured. While all 5 treasures seemed to defy time and appearance, it was their sparkling personalities that truly captured our attention. The majority of readers were particularly amazed by the lively spirit and active lifestyles of 103-year-old Ida, which is pictured here. Miss Ida is in a red leather jumpsuit, and she is 103 years old and looks very well. The next article, American Politics Beyond 2020. This is also from Ebony. As I have explained over the past several weeks, demographics have reshaped the country's politics. The electorate in 2020 will be the most diverse in U.S. history. The electorate in 2024 will be even more so. These changes are symptoms of a larger change in the social fabric. The America of 2030 will not look like the America of 1950 or even 2016. We are becoming more diverse, more multicultural. In many ways, our current politics are a debate about whether we should embrace these changes or view them as a threat. So, just how different will the U.S. electorate look in 10 to 20 years? And how will these demographic changes affect party politics? A multicultural America. The population is going to look a lot different in 10 years. The difference will be even more significant in 20. In the future, no one group will make up a majority of the population. The era of America being a majority white non-Hispanic country is coming to a close. The writing is on the wall. America's children look much different than its adult population. Only half of America under 18 are white non-Hispanic. A full 50% of all children are either Latino, African American, Asian, or biracial. Compare this to the overall population. 60% of the population is white non-Hispanic. This number is gradually shrinking because of differences in birth rate and immigration from Latin America and Asia. According to the U.S. Census, immigration will be the primary driver of population growing beginning in 2030. The census projects that non-Hispanic whites will no longer be a majority of the population in 2045. Looking at these statistics, it is easy to see why immigration is such a diverse political issue. The politics of and the backlash against a multicultural America. Barack Obama's 2008 election shook parts of white America to its core. Many assumed that a conservative white Christian political coalition would always be dominant. Obama's victory shattered this illusion. He showed that other types of winning coalitions are possible, diverse, multiracial, and not dependent on winning a majority of whites. Obama gave parts of white America a taste of what it's like to not be the dominant group. They did not like it. The backlash was intense. What scares parts of white America even more is that the demographic changes that made Obama's election possible are not slowing down. White America is facing an identity crisis. Whites are declining as a proportion of the population. White millennials, those born in the 1980s and early 1990s, and Gen Zers, the generation born in the late 1990s and early 2000s, are both secular and liberal. The political dominance of white middle-aged Christians is fading. It is already very difficult to win nationwide and in many states on the strength of the white vote alone. It will become even harder as time goes by. Not all whites are threatened by these changes, but the ones who are threatened are looking to retrench. Make America Great Again is an appeal to a time of unchallenged white dominance, something demographic changes have eroded. Donald Trump makes more sense in this context. Whites' fears of losing status gave rise to Trump and the larger white identity movement that bore him. Other countries are experiencing similar reactions to changing demographics. We are at a dangerous juncture. The white Christian conservative coalition might come to the point where they realize they cannot win anywhere close to a majority of votes and start to look for ways to subvert the democratic process. They have already begun to flirt with this strategy. Republican-controlled state legislatures in Michigan, North Carolina, and Wisconsin have all attempted to use lame duck sessions to strike power from newly elected Democratic governors. If you can win fair and square, just change the rules. This threat extends to voting rights as well. Republican-controlled state legislators have been actively trying to suppress minority votes. They have enacted voter ID laws, rolled back same-day registration, early voting, and closed voting precincts. One federal appeals judge said North Carolina efforts to restrict voting targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. National-level Republicans are also toying with similar types of ideas. Trump has been active in circulating bogus theories about how millions of non-citizens vote in U.S. elections. He has gone so far as to form a now discredited commission to investigate. Trump's claim is baloney, of course, but the claim that illegals are voting and we need to stop them will serve as the pretense for some type of federal effort to roll back voting rights. The Republican Party will need to become more diverse to win. Hopefully, they can come to this conclusion themselves and try to broaden their appeal as opposed to looking for ways to shut out diverse voices. My fear is that many Republican elected officials will seek to gerrymander, disenfranchise, and strip power from Democratic-controlled institutions rather than face the possibility of playing by the rules and losing. groups rarely give up power willingly. Well, what can be done? This is a battle that must be fought on two fronts. First, the Democrats must look to capture as many elected offices as possible. This means not just focusing on presidential elections. The Democrats must take state and local races seriously too. The 2018 midterms were a good step, but there is much more to be done. The Republicans' ability to disenfranchise and gerrymander is significantly reduced when they are in the minority. But competing and winning elections is not enough. The Democrats will not win everywhere, and even when they do, there might still be malfeasance. They must be ready to fight these laws in court. Here, organizations such as the NAACP, League of United Latin American Citizens, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the League of Women Voters, along with the state and national Democratic Party organizations, are critical. Democratic leaders and voters must be prepared when voting rights come under further attack. One thing that average citizens can do is join and contribute to these organizations. Showing up to vote is hugely important, but protecting the integrity of the democratic process is a bigger and more important fight. These organizations are on the front lines of voting rights battles. It is vitally important that they have the resources to fight efforts to roll back voting rights in the courts. The politics of the future. The rise of Donald Trump is one of the profound challenges of our time. Trump might come and go, but he is the product of more enduring forces. We should not expect the conditions that produced Trump to disappear as he leaves the scene. Democratic changes will make it harder for candidates like Trump to win in the future. However, there is no guarantee. Democratic changes will only tip the scales if everyone who is eligible to vote can exercise this right. We must be ready to protect it. These last few articles are from Ebony. Don Lemon and April Ryan have tense debate over Senator Kamala Harris. CNN host Don Lemon and White House correspondent April Ryan recently engaged in an intense debate regarding presidential candidate Senator Kamala Harris and her ancestry. There's been much discussion over Harris's heritage since she announced her candidacy. During a visit to the Breakfast Club, Harris attempted to dismiss reports that she is not African American, saying it's the same rhetoric that was once used against Barack Obama to divide the country. Harris's mother is an immigrant from India and her father an immigrant from Jamaica. The senator was born in Oakland, California. After viewing a clip from the interview, Ryan questioned why the blackness of mixed-race candidates is always in question. Lemon then cuts her off, believing she missed the point. No, 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 no. I think you're hearing what people are saying. I think you're not hearing what people are saying. The people that are saying is she is black enough. That's bull. That's BS. No, 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 no. I think you're not hearing what people are saying. The people that are saying is she black enough. That's bull. That's BS. But to what that distinction to say, is she African American or is she black or whatever? There is nothing wrong with that. There's a difference between being African American and being black. Ryan responds by reiterating that Harris is a black woman for sure, which Lemon doesn't dispute. I agree with that. But is she African American? There is a difference, and there's nothing wrong with that. No one is trying to take anything away from her. I think you're falling into the trap of that. He went on, All she had to do was say, "I am black, but I'm not African American." Ryan then pointed out that slaves from Africa were taken to the Caribbean as well as the States, to which Lemon responds, "Jamaica's not America." Jamaica did not come out of Jim Crow. As the conversation continues, Lemon suggests that Harris is not an American descendant of slavery and that Ryan's argument misses the overall point of those questioning Harris's cultural identity. 28 Days of Ebony Love, Jadea urges men to protect women. For the second week of the Ebony Love campaign series, musical artist Jadea spoke about what love looks like through community. Ebony Love, to me, is about taking responsibility. The Wonderland artist said, "Taking responsibility of our children, our families, our neighborhoods, and our partners, and to the larger tribe." He added, "I believe as men, regardless of sexual orientation or religion, it is our duty to support, to listen, to protect, and defend our women at all cost." Next article, Colorado store to close after boycotting Nike over Kaepernick ad. A Colorado sports apparel store will shut its doors after its owner stopped selling Nike products because of the company's support of Colin Kaepernick. The ad, which said, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything," stood out to Stephen Martin when he saw it in September. He decided that he would take a stand against Nike, according to CNN. He sold off all the Nike products from his sports apparel and memorabilia store, Primetime Sports, despite knowing that it would damage his sales. He announced this week that his store is set to close. "Being a sports store without Nike is like being a gas station without gas," he said Wednesday, according to CNN. "This was never about property to me. This was about principle." Martin said that he places principles over profits and that he doesn't regret taking the stance, even though the lost revenue led to his decision to close the store. "You don't trample over the men who have given Colin Kaepernick and me the right to free speech," he said. Controversy has surrounded the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback after he began to kneel during the national anthem during the 2016 NFL season to protest police brutality and racism. Kaepernick has been accused of not supporting the military and disrespecting the flag while taking up social justice causes. "I didn't give in to big Nike and big dollars. I didn't give in. I did it in my way," Martin told CNN, affiliate of KOAA. Courtney B. Vance wants people to know more about Black history. Courtney B. Vance's one wish this Black History Month is for the Black community to delve deeper into its history. The actor, who was nominated for a Best Spoken Word Album Grammy for Accessory to War, spoke to Ebony on the red carpet on the 61st Annual Grammy Awards Ceremony Sunday and said, "There are Black figures many people do not know about. I want us to know about us," the Emmy and Tony winner said. "There are so many of us that were impactful in Black life throughout the ages that we know nothing about. In the information age, we know less and less." Vance also mentioned that people tend to look for information but rarely go past the first page on Google. "My mother was a librarian for 30 years. We grew up in the library. The Dewey Decimal System was our best friend." The actor added, "I wish people would just read and research and find out how great African Americans are. Our people changed lives." Vance, who's the husband of the incomparable actress Angela Bassett, said he's able to tap into particular roles because he's a storyteller and that he mostly takes in literature through audiobooks. Next article, Regina King nearly trampled by Joel Embiid during NBA game. Regina King was nearly kicked in the head by Philadelphia 76er Joel Embiid while sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden for a New York Knicks game on Wednesday night. During the third quarter, Embiid lost momentum as he charged for a loose ball. The 7-foot-tall athlete then went flying into the first row of seats and right at King. Imagine the last thing you see is Joel Embiid running full speed at you, ESPN tweeted alongside a video of the incident. Luckily for the Oscar-nominated actress, the NBA star used his agility to avoid falling into her. Instead, Embiid landed on a Madison Square Garden statistician who, according to Yahoo News, he apologized to after the game. "It's good that I saved her life, I guess," the basketball player told the sports outlet. "But someone else had to take that, and I'm sorry for that." After the game, King addressed the misstep on Twitter, writing, "Yo, thank God and Joel Embiid for your athletic ability. Crisis averted." Tamar Braxton is the first black housemate to win Celebrity Big Brother. Tamar Braxton has made reality show history, becoming the first African-American to win the CBS series Celebrity Big Brother. Braxton, along with Dinah Lohan, Ricky Williams, Lolo Jones, and Candy Burris, headed into Wednesday's night season 2 finale, competing for a grand prize of $250,000. After a series of challenges, Braxton took home the $250,000 prize, and runner-up Williams walked away with $50,000. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Ebony. We hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, and reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Comments or questions, call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.